Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City, online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm a manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Janet, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, to go, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Hello there. Sports Talk is upon us. It's a 4 o'clock hour on a Wednesday.
What day is it today?
Hump day!
What day is it today? Hump day!
It's also what we like to affectionately refer to around here as Yay Day. Of course, our buddy Sarah from Green Hill Humane Society pops in and will tell you all about the latest pet of the week, the doggy, who waits a week for months and months and months now to get them adopted out and to find them their forever home. And man, how about our colleagues over at KVAL, along with Green Hill, yesterday, their tail-a-thon, their goal was $60,000. They raised $65,000. They've got the new digs, which is obviously a critical community effort, and just real nice to see. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Pac-12 Media Day today. Utah, the favorite to win the whole thing. So 35 media members, I guess there used to be 36, I'm pretty sure Austin Meek had a vote, but he's now more likely to vote in the Big Ten media poll.
Vote early, vote often.
So of the 35 votes in the South, Utah got 33, USC 2, nobody else. Arizona State, UCLA picked 3rd. Arizona 5th, Coloradians 6th. You know, Colorado, before I get to the North, as a conference team, literally has been awful. I mean, terrible. They've had one year. I mean, they rose up out of absolute what? Nowhere. What was that? 2016. Yeah, the year the Ducks bottomed out. Actually, that kind of Steven Montez was the backup quarterback to the Buffs, and they went to Michigan, and the starter, I can't even remember who the hell it was, got injured. Montez came in and did nothing, and then they came here, and he played great, and little do we know, because it was against an awful, awful Oregon defense. But you know, you look at this team who had 10 wins. I mean, they've gone 5-7 the last 2 years. But, you know, if you look at what they've done in conference, they won 2 games in 2017. And in 2018, they won 2 games. So, and that's been it. When I say they won 2 games, that aside from 2016, when they had that crazy run and beat and won the South at 8-1, I mean, so this is their 2011. So this is going to be their 9th year. I'm pretty sure that 8 wins in 2016, that's like a chunk. I'm not saying that for effect, but that's like a chunk of their total Pac-12 wins since they joined. What did I say? They had 2 each of the last 2 years. So in 2015, they had 1. I'm going to do the math here because it's actually kind of amazing. I mean, it's not like Utah, who came from a mid-major, to, I guess is the best way to put it. They came from a really storied history, from the Big 8, the Big 12. I mean, this is a team, I know in the scope of things, it's a really long time ago. But in the 1990s, it started the 1990s, they won a share of a national title. And now, I don't even, they've had a bunch of offers. So their first year as a part of this conference would be 2011. All right, I wasn't that far off. Aside from 2016, Colorado's won 9 conference games. 8, so 17, but 8 in 1 year. And they are picked dead last this year. I mean, they garnered a total of 46 points, Arizona 85. Now, just because the media says they're going to be garbage and finish last doesn't mean they are, but it also doesn't mean they're not. The year that they rose up and shocked the conference by winning it was 2016, when they were picked 6th. So in the North, by the narrowest of margins, and by the way, there were a few of you. I wish I could remember when we had the conversation. Sam, did Nick write the date that I predicted the media would have Oregon winning the North?
It says here 12/27/18.
Okay, because I caught some grief on Twitter, because I said I'm not, and you know, you got to clarify sometimes, because people are, you said it. No, I didn't. For all you know, I think Oregon is going to go 0-12 this year. I don't, but I said I'm predicting based on the way I know the media's mind works. When you lose your All-American caliber backfield in Brownie and Gaskin, and Oregon has theirs coming back, I knew the media would favor Oregon. It was the slimmest of margins. But they did.
I explicitly wrote on the sticky note as well that this is not a prediction, but you are predicting what the media will
predict. Right.
So you predicted someone else's prediction. That's two predictions, Steve.
It's a double. So Oregon and Washington each had 17 first place votes. Stanford, which came in 3rd in the poll, had none. Washington State, which came in 4th, had 1, followed by Cal, who people are just too skeptical of a team that's that defense-minded in an offense-minded conference, and Oregon State bringing up the rear with even less total votes than Colorado. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Steven. Steven, good afternoon. How's it going?
It's good, Steve, Dan, and Steven Baroni, associate water boy for NCU. We're doing an outstanding job for the YMCA kids that we're hosting at NCU. Tomorrow's the last day that we're hosting the kids. And they're just doing a fabulous job listening to the coaches of how we're teaching them how to do basketball.
All righty. Thanks a lot, Steven. Sometimes when Steven calls, the subject just changes. And it's what they call rolling with the punches. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Over the next day is a lot of the sound and audio that was made available. But, you know, I want to get around to, I want you folks to hear what, you know, Herbert and what Cristobal had to say. We'll get a chance with some face-to-face time a week from Friday at Oregon's official media day. Be it on the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, 284-8571, the text line 3210824. You can try us on Twitter at 953thescore or at SportsTalk953 for yours truly. First ones for the station, or if you want to tweet at Nick, at Rick Nodgers. One of the first announcements that came out of Hollywood today is this will be the last year of the conference championship game being held at Levi's Stadium, Santa Clara, home of the Niners. And it's a rarity. I haven't heard one person say anything negative about that. There are some, including George Schroeder, who think it eventually will be ticketed for the new stadium in Los Angeles. But I like the neutral site. I like Vegas, man. Look, I'm not saying there aren't a trillion things to do in L.A. L.A. is spectacular. I mean, you go to L.A. in December, chances are the Chargers or Rams are going to be home. Not to mention the beach. Not to mention, if you've got the wherewithal, you could do a little puddle jumper over to Vegas. But, man, the thought of what we've witnessed when, you know, I just realized the original return of the Pac-12 basketball tournament, didn't that take us to Staples originally? But, and I don't care if you are a basketball junkie conference like the ACC or Big East. And we've seen some years, you know, those first round games once upon a time, whether it's a North Carolina State and Clemson, there's not a lot of people in there for that Wednesday afternoon kickoff game. Just like, you know, we used to actually, I went to a couple of first round Big East games at the Garden where, you know, you walk in with tickets and you can sit where the hell you want until the night schedule kicked in. But Staples wasn't great until the, you know, the semis or the finals. And all we've heard about from both the men's and women's side is that the site in Vegas, is it T-Mobile Arena, has just been a home run. Now, I just realized they said next year. So, I ask you this all the time, and I always screw up the timeline. Is the Raiders Stadium available for next year?
Yes.
A year from December.
So this is playing in Oakland. Remember, most of the offseason, I was laughing at that.
Thank you.
The Raiders had not actually finalized a place to play for this upcoming season. They could have gone very briefly to San Antonio. There was talks of sharing Levi's Stadium with the Niners. Didn't really matter. So, yeah, their stadium is set to open next year, as is the Rams and Carson Chargers Stadium in L.A., which is apparently going to be hosting
everything.
Everything, yeah, very soon.
Man, that place in L.A. is going to be space age, isn't it? I mean, what did they say it's going to be? What, $2.5 billion or something like that? Are they literally going to have, like,
Yeah, it's going to be wild. It's going to be another state-of-the-art, brand-new stadium that just blows the previous one right out of the water of how special and fancy it is. And I think the construction is moving along very fine. For some reason, I don't know if it's because the station's handle doesn't follow a lot of Raider-related things, or maybe people have just forgotten about the Raiders stadium. I have not seen any updated pictures of the construction of the stadium like I'm seeing of the Rams. Like, I know they're building it and it's obviously right. Set to be ready to go and everything like that. It's just like nobody's like, hey, I'm in Vegas, here's what the stadium looks like. Like, nobody's done
that. It is kind of strange.
Because
I mean, I get updates from Civic Stadium.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I see those all the time too, and we know how that's progressing and moving along. I don't know who we need to follow to get updates on the Raiders stadium, but that's one of my favorite things about new stadiums being built is the time lapse that they put together of you seeing the foundation coming in, every layer coming up, the seats going in.
Question: the new LA stadium, the new Vegas stadium. Do we know what the name is going to be, or is that going to go through a selling to a corporation process? I mean, it's not going to be Raiders Stadium in Las Vegas.
I want to say that the Raiders Stadium is going to be named after a bank, but not. I want to say U.S. Bank, but that's what the Vikings are. Their stadium is named. I feel like maybe State Farm? Somebody has sponsored, like, your future home of the Vegas Raiders, brought to you by this you know, brand here. The Raiders, the Rams Clippers Stadium has still yet to be named.
TBD. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. I believe our Cracker Jack staff has unearthed a potential answer. Sam?
As of right now, it is just being called Las Vegas Stadium because they are in talks to be able to kind of get somebody who will be willing to sponsor the stadium that will host events for the Raiders as well as UNLV. And as for the Chargers' new stadium, it's called LA Stadium at Hollywood Park as of right now. But I guarantee you corporate sponsors will be put on both of those within the next year.
I love it. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. No truth to the rumor that it's going to be the Las Vegas Strip Club Stadium with the CEO is Pac-Man Jones. All right, let's get to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and bring in Mike. Mike, good afternoon. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Oh, my God. That could bring in a whole the stripper thought just brought in a whole new name for the stadiums. But so the Pac-12 is moving their football game to Vegas in the for the 2021 season.
No, this year for 2019 they'll play in Santa Clara again.
Yeah.
So for next year it'll be in Vegas.
Yeah. So 2021 it'll be in Vegas. Right on.
Hey, so 2020.
2020. I'm sorry, but the game's actually
no. It's not. Actually, remember, it's not.
Oh, that's right.
It's December.
A December game. Yeah. So, what bowl games are in the rotation? The college football rotation this year is the Rose Bowl back in the rotation?
Oh, for the championship game.
Yeah, for the four-team playoff.
Man, I'm gonna have to put our Cracker Jack staff back on that because off the top of my head. Okay, here we go. So it's for the 2019 season. Fiesta Bowl, Peach Bowl. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, the Fiesta Bowl and Peach Bowl?
Yeah.
And where's the national championship game at?
Let's see. I have no idea. For some reason.
Probably Jerry World again.
Miami.
It might be Miami. I don't know why this article only gave me the semifinal games. That's unbelievable. Right. Thanks a lot, Mike. Now, is that an Oregon fan thinking, I know. I got an idea. Oregon's going back to the Natty. It seems like might be getting a tad ahead of yourself. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Jeff. Jeff. Whoa, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going? Sorry, let me get this phone real quick.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Sorry about that. I'm on my hands-free because I'm driving. I'll make this real quick. If you guys want to see updated images of the Raiders stadium, go to Raiders.com, and they actually have a live video link to it. I'm a big-time Raiders fan, so that's what I do.
Ah, I see. All right. I appreciate the heads up. You might want to take that call. I think it's a big sale coming through. Thanks a lot, Jeff. The 2020 college football playoff will be played in the Mercedes-Benz Dome in New Orleans.
Oh, the other one.
So now we know that. So they're playing a semifinal at the Mercedes-Benz Dome in Atlanta, and then the final at Mercedes-Benz in New Orleans. And there you go. Make your accordingly. How's that? 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So what did I say? The Fiesta Bowl and the Peach Bowl. All right. Those are the semis, and then the finals are in New Orleans. Now we know. By the way, how many times am I going to get that wrong between now and Thanksgiving?
Infinitely.
All right, folks. Before we move it along, I want to remind you, Wednesday, we've got the joy of talking with our friends from Green Hill. So we're going to do that. We'll have a Coors Light update, and then our conversation with former Register Guard columnist and author Bob Welsh, who will talk about his book, The Wizard of Foz, Dick Fosbury's one-man high jump revolution. It's all coming at you next, 95.3 The Score. Alrighty, it's that time on a Wednesday. We call it Yay Day. Sarah from Green Hill is here with another doggy.
Yes.
Sarah, how's it going?
Pretty great. How are you?
Awesome. So yesterday, I know you're not on the business end,
nope,
but the Kalathon with K-Val.
It seemed to be a pretty good success.
Kind of went off the charts. I think they were looking for 60,000. I saw the latest was 65,000.
Yep, just
so
a little over 65.
Could we call today a double yay day?
Absolutely. I'm down with that.
All right. Awesome. So we've got a wiggly girl in here.
A wiggly girl, unique name.
Oh, beautiful. What? Who are we dealing with? Who's our guest?
Yeah, we've got Ziva today. Ziva is a four-year-old border collie. She's mainly black with a little bit of white, you know, the typical fox ears standing straight up. And she's, her tail isn't docked, which is kind of unique for a border collie because usually they have docked tails. But so she has a really sweet, just wiggly tail when she gets super excited when she sees everybody. And her butt just kind of goes with it, too. It's really cute. So she is weighing in about 72 pounds. So she's a little bit too big.
Exercise.
She definitely needs some exercise. And because she is a border collie, she is part of that working breed dog. And so she really just needs a task to do. And the way that border collies kind of minds work is they just kind of, if they don't have that task, they'll be really anxious, bark a lot, kind of, you know, get into trouble. So she was an owner surrender, and I'm pretty sure for probably that exact reason, just because they couldn't adapt to what she really needed. And it's really not that hard. You kind of just got to give them a good task to do, and you know, that could be as simple as playing fetch with them every day, or going on a walk, or just going and running. That's that simple.
It's got to be something.
Yeah.
We had a Malinois, and it's not like having an old hound who's just going to lay around in the sun.
Yep.
They need a task.
They do.
And you could play fun mind games, take a toy and wrap it in a blanket.
Exactly.
And have them do that.
And there's so many toys out there these days that just kind of do it for you. So many treat incentive games. And so it's really easy to adapt to Ziva's kind of lifestyle that she needs. Ziva doesn't really get along with other dogs, so she really needs to be the only dog at home. No other cats, or no cats, period, because she has a high prey drive. Kids, she's had pretty good history with kids, as long as they're a little bit older to where they can kind of just give her the space that she needs when she needs it. And other than that, she's a really great dog.
You know, it's important. I don't know if we've talked about this, that you just don't want to adopt the cute dog. It's important to know your lifestyle, what circumstances await you at your home versus the kind of dog you want to enter into your life.
And Ziva would be a great agility dog. She's just an active dog. She's right now, because of her weight, she's a little moderate temperament, you know, moderate. But if you get her out and kind of burn off those extra few pounds, she would be a really great, you know, frisbee catching dog, or just even going on a run, or just, you know, she's just got a really cute.
Yeah, we always, with our shepherd, used to kind of put the imaginary words in his mind. Toy, toy, toy. Play, play, play. Let's go, let's go, let's go.
Let's go, let's go. Yep, that's definitely Ziva.
So, again, the process, if you're listening and you're thinking, what a great chance to adopt and give a doggy, it's forever home.
Forever home.
What do we do?
Well, it's really simple. Go down to the Green Hill location, which is over off of, well, I guess I shouldn't say location. We only have one place.
The location.
The location. So Green Hill's over off of Green Hill Road. We're open 7 days a week, 11 to 6 p.m. If you have any interest in adopting any of the animals that are available, come on down, fill out some paperwork. And that's just really one sheet of paperwork. That's just your name and your information. And then you meet the animal, meet the dog. If you have any other dogs that you want them to meet, bring them too. We'll put them in a little area to where they can see if they get along, and then
try before you, well, not buy before you adopt.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Oh, always a pleasure, Sarah.
Thank you for having us.
Great seeing you again. Learn more, visit green-hill.org. Let's take a break. We'll come back, and next up on Sports Talk, we'll talk with Bob Welsh, former Register Guard columnist. His new book is The Wizard of Foz, Dick Fosbury's one-man high jump revolution. Coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
you would love for a guy like that to come back and send another tier in your program. So as we're kind of breaking down the different facts and figures that go with this thing, and, you know, his parents are sitting there, and, you know, getting a little bit nerved up, a little sweat starts kind of forming on the tip of my head. He just kind of looks at me and says, "Coach, I'm coming back. You know, this is where I want to be." And he stated all the reasons why he wanted to come back, and everyone felt it was just the right stuff at the right time. So we're blessed beyond words to have him.
Mario Cristobal talking about when he learned that Justin Herbert would be returning to school as a head football coach. When an NFL caliber player stands before you and says, "I'm not going pro, I'm going to come back and play for you," and the most important position basically in sports, I would say that's probably a good one. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline, which we're going to lock down because we've got an interview all ready to roll, ready to roll before we move along. Quick little shout out to our friends at Small World Auto 2090 West 11th in Eugene. Their phone number is 228-9774. The website is smallworldauto.com. They're a family-owned automotive service center featuring a state-of-the-art multi-service bay repair shop. They got a great reputation for integrity and the quality of work they do. All right, so we'll try and get Bob in here in uno momente, por favor. And otherwise, we've got Pac-12 Media Day to talk about. And the not a lot of surprises, because everything kind of ran true to form, be it the media poll, who was there, who was representing each respective school, and, you know, with Troy Dye and Justin Herbert and the head coach there. And hard to believe that 1 week from Friday we'll be at Autzen for the U of O Media Day. So tick, 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 tick. July 24th, one full week left. What is it, 5 weeks from? No, it's 4 weeks from. No, 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 5 weeks from Saturday, the Auburn game. So that has a very big-time reality about it, if that makes sense. There's a lot of matinees today. Last night was just nuts in Major League Baseball. You know, the Giants, who lost today 4-1, but won by a run again. So last week against the Mets, Thursday, Friday, Samardzija got smacked around a little bit Saturday, and they lost, but they won Sunday, all in extra inning walk-off fashion. And they did it again last night with the Pablo Sandoval dinger. And then today, Cubbies got the best of them. But just some really scintillating stuff. All right, let's lock up the Oregon fuel injection hotline. Our next guest, certainly familiar to our area, spent many years as a tremendous columnist for the Register Guard. Now retired from that gig, sure keeping busy. He's got a book out called The Wizard of Foz, the story of Dick Fosbury, who, you know, of course, changed high jumping. You can follow Bob on Twitter at Bob_Welsh23. Check out his website, bobwelsh.net. Bob Welsh joins us. Bob, great getting a chance to catch up. How's life treating you these days?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate you having me on the show.
So I've done this show for about a quarter century, and I always ask authors the same first question, well, unless it's an autobiography, but this undertaking always fascinates me. The idea is born, the follow-up, how it all comes to be. So from "I'd like to write this book" to getting it green-lighted, kind of take us through the process that landed us here.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Corvallis as a kid, so I was always fascinated by Dick Fosbury. And in 1988, I wrote a piece for Sports Illustrated on him on the 20-year anniversary of his gold medal. And then I blinked, and 30 more years had passed, and I suddenly said, hey, 50th anniversary of Foz's jump. Ought to do a book on him. Called him. He said, yeah. From the time I made that call to the time the book came out, 1.5 years.
Wow. Okay, actually, that's probably not that long. But, you know, for those of us who follow sports, unique concepts are often born out of frustration or even failure.
Yeah.
You know, you have pitchers who end up as knuckleballers, golfers change putting grips. But, you know, in researching this book, Bob, the conversations you had, and obviously in working with Dick himself, what led him to say back more than a half century ago, I'm not going over the bar in the conventional method. I'm going back of the head, back, butt, and feet.
Something deep in his conscience said it in midair one day in April of 1963. His brother had been killed a year before in a hit and run accident when the two were riding their bikes. And Fosbury's parents divorced a year later. He was a kid looking to belong somewhere, and there was nowhere to belong. He couldn't make the football team. He couldn't make the basketball team. Track was his last best hope in a town of Medford where athletes ruled. And so for him to belong, to stay on that Medford team, he had to keep jumping higher. He was one of the worst high jumpers in the state. And so out of desperation, I guess the short answer to your question is desperation. That's what drove him. But in the middle, he wanted it. He was terrible at the Western Roll, 5'4 to 5'10 in one day, and the flop was born.
Awesome. Talking with the former Register Guard columnist Bob Welsh, author of the new book, The Wizard of Foz, Dick Fosbury's, in essence, one-man high jump revolution on Skyhorse Publishing. Before we move along, let's try and sell some books. Where can folks get it? And I'm also curious, you know, being here in Tracktown, who, you know, live and die with track and field.
Yeah, it's available local bookstores, Amazon.com, just about wherever you find books. I think you'll find The Wizard of Foz, and it has been tremendously rewarding. We just won the Track and Field Writers of America's award as the Book of the Year in 2018, and that was cool. And just to have people like Kenny Moore endorse your book, I mean, I've just been a huge fan of his since I walked on the U of O campus in 1972 and saw him, and I always joke with him. I literally wrote home about you. You know, that's how it was, how cool I thought you were working for Sports Illustrated, being a marathoner. He gave us the endorsement for the front of the book. And anyway, Mary Pylon has endorsed it. You know, a young kid, well, yeah, she's young to me. Grew up Churchill High School, one of our 20 below kids at Register Guard, then went on and it's written a couple of bestsellers herself. So it's been neat to get the good feedback, although it's hard in these times to get anybody east of Bend interested in track and field.
That's,
I mean, it's just frustrating.
You know, I take pride in how my knowledge of sports history, and I got to be honest, when I think of the 1968 Olympic Games, it's Bob Beamon's long jump, Tommy Smith and John Carlos with the fists on the podium, maybe George Foreman.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize Fosbury won the gold medal, so I'm kind of curious, would I be accurate to say that while everybody who follows sports know his name, but a big value of your book is maybe people learning his accomplishments and just the deeper story involved?
Yeah. I think a lot of West Coast baby boomers know the story. That's my theory thus far. But I think a lot of other people have heard the guy's name and like, well, maybe he invented this. But if you're under the age of 60, you know, a lot of people I've talked to have no clue that there was any other way that anyone ever high jumped. It's like my grandkids, you know, I have a pickup that's old enough where you roll the windows down. I said to my grandkid, I said, go roll the window down. He goes, what do you mean? I go, well, you know, can you roll the window? He goes, that's not how you do it, Bob. You press a button. And so it's the same way with high jumping. A lot of young people just don't know there was any other way. But when they hear this story that here is literally one of the worst high jumpers in the state of Oregon in 1963, and he's standing on the podium in 1968, 5 years later, And within 10 years, he's revolutionized the world. Nobody does anything but the Fosbury flop anymore. It's unlike any other sports story that's ever come around.
No, it's fantastic. We continue with writer, columnist Bob Welsh, the new book, The Wizard of Foz, the story of high jump gold medalists, which I learned, and innovator Dick Fosbury. You know, along the lines of what I just asked, and you mentioned being from Corvallis, in 1969, a controversy emerged at Oregon State. Football coach D'Andros dismissed a black player for sporting facial hair, albeit during the off season, there was a boycott on campus. What would you fill in about the details and maybe the stance Fosbury took?
Okay, let me give you a little bit of context. Fosbury grew up, of course, in Medford. And Medford, in the 60s, had a very well-earned reputation as being a fairly racist place, to be blunt. There was a sign that said, you know, they had a sunset law. If you were black, you weren't to stay overnight. They invited a nationally known opera singer there, African American, but wouldn't let her stay in town.
Jeez.
This kind of thing. And so that was the context that Fosbury grew up in. And all during the 60s, when he became a college athlete, he started to compete, you know, with the best of the best. He always kept quiet. This was the time, 68, when the rumors of the boycott were going on. The NYAC games in New York were boycotted. But Fosbury just kind of kept his head down. He just didn't want to get involved in any of that. He just concentrated on high jumping and on not getting drafted. But anyway, once he won the gold medal, it's like this: the scales fell off his eyes, and he started to look at life through the eyes of those athletes. You know, why would Smith and Carlos risk their careers by raising gloved hands? Well, he understood why, because, you know, we live in a world where in San Jose I can win a sprint race on Saturday, but on Sunday I can't rent an apartment. But the blonde-haired woman an hour later can. And so Fosbury suddenly stood up in the Fred Milton controversy when D'Andros kicked the player off the team, and the entire Oregon State athletic establishment basically supported D'Andros. Fosbury took a stand for Fred Milton and said, "This isn't right. This isn't right. You know, he wouldn't have kicked that guy off had he had a little facial hair, had it been white." And it's true. I mean, at the time, you know, the white athletes had the Stephen Stills sideburns and stuff like that. And the Black Student Union was trying to point out, you know, this isn't just about facial hair, folks. This is about the fact that we have trouble getting housing in Corvallis. It's that the athletic department has an unwritten policy that a black athlete can't date a white woman. It's deeper than that. And Fosbury saw that, and he took a heroic stance. And I think that his story is as interesting, I think, for what he did, you know, winning the Olympic gold medal, as it is for what he did afterwards. And he refused to be pigeonholed as just another athlete. I mean, he went back to school. Everybody wanted him to, you know, it was kind of, what have you done for us lately? They wanted him to win the 72 Olympics. And you know what? He wanted to be a civil engineer. And he went back to school and got his degree, and that's what he became. And I've always appreciated him for the heroic stance he took and for being willing to be an individual and not just kind of be a leaf on the river of our culture and go where everybody else goes. So that's what he became, a civil engineer in Idaho.
Yeah, that's a fascinating aspect. And another thing, like most cases of innovation, the old guard gets very defensive. How would you describe the reaction of then Oregon State track and field coach Bernie Wagner when he saw the Fosbury flop and, I guess, his timeline to acceptance?
Yeah, Bernie wanted Dick as an athlete on the track and field team, but he wasn't convinced that his future was in high jumping until
nice
Dick
call.
Won the gold medal. Then he was more than happy to tell everybody he was Dick's coach. But no, Wagner was a mixed bag. He thought Dick was a great athlete, but he didn't quite. He said this new style of his might just be a shortcut to mediocrity. And so he worked out a deal with Fosbury. He said, "Okay, you come to Oregon State. You spend the week learning how to do the straddle, the way you're supposed to jump. And you, on Saturdays, you can use whatever style you've got there to win points for us for Oregon State." Well, that was a recipe for disaster, because, in essence, every time Dick stood before that bar, he could be thinking, my coach doesn't believe in me. And so for a year and a half, he just did nothing, his freshman, early in his sophomore year. And then finally, he uncorked a 6'10 school record at Fresno State in his sophomore year. And finally, Wagner raised the white flag and said, okay, whatever this is doing, let's learn how you can do it better. So, yeah, he was not an early believer, but he became, you know, he became a believer.
A couple final thoughts with Bob Welsh, the new book, The Wizard of Foz, the remarkable story of the Fosbury flop. Back to the 68 games again, because it was no lock he would even make the team. And, you know, knowing the history, I guess, seeing the trials here. So they had two different meets to determine to who would go to Mexico City. Kind of take us through the a little bit of drama in Los Angeles, the field he faced, I guess a time violation, and of course, aha, success.
Yeah. The Olympic Committee said, okay, two-tiered trials. We'll do the winners from the L.A. meet will all go. Then that'll be in late June. Then in September, we'll go up to elevation. That's part of the fascinating part of the story is that they put a track in, Bowerman did, in fact, at 7,300 feet above Lake Tahoe to simulate the high elevation of Mexico City. So then in September, we'll have the second part of the trials, and the second and third placers will be chosen from there. Well, Fosbury, even though he was flagged for being too slow to jump and had just two jumps to do it. He won in L.A., came back to Oregon. Oh, I'm on the Olympic team. Comes back to Lake Tahoe just to watch his buddies compete. You know, he's already on the team. When he sees a sign on the cafeteria door, oh, we've changed our mind about how we're choosing the team. L.A. no longer counts. I mean, can you imagine this? The USOC has had 4 years to figure out how to do this, and in midstream, less than a week before this meet, they changed the rules. It turned out that the athletes themselves were the power behind it, and they thought, wait a minute, all but 18 of them had not won in L.A., and they thought, you know what? Why don't we just have those results thrown out? And they did. And so it was not fair to people like Fosbury or to Dave Patrick, who was one of two people who did not make the team after the trials at South Lake Tahoe, but that's the way it did it. And Fosbury was down to his last miss at Echo Summit there above Lake Tahoe, and uncorked an amazing jump at 7'2" on his last attempt, then made his first jump at 7'3" and got the last spot on the team. Otherwise, this story never would have happened.
Unbelievable. We would have had to talk about something completely different today. In closing, I'm going to let you be your own PR man. Remind the folks where to get the book, what kind of trip down memory lane it is, kind of a testament to excellence, and the type of story they'll experience when they pick up copy of this book and give it a read.
Yeah. Well, I think you can get it at local bookstores, Amazon.com, pretty much wherever books are sold. And I think the value for the readers, I think for those who know the flop, who think they know the flop, as I did, was that a far deeper story. And we just talked about part of it right there, where a guy thinks he's on the Olympic team and then finds out he's not, where we talk about the death of his brother. It's far deeper story, I think, than the people who know the flop believe. And I think that it's just an inspirational story about a guy who dared to think outside the box. And I think that in our world, sometimes we think you've got to do things, we always have to do things the same way. And here's a 15-year-old kid who taught us otherwise. So for me alone, I think it's inspirational. And I think what puts a stamp of sort of approval on the whole thing is that Fosbury wound up remaining a really great guy. He's the president of the U.S. Olympic Committee or Association. He ran as a Democrat for county commissioner seat in Idaho at age 72 and won. He puts on clinics around the country for kids. He's a great ambassador for America, for Oregon State, and for track and field in general.
Folks, he's Bob Welsh. First, congratulations. It's a terrific piece of work, a really unique story. The book is Wizard of Foz, Dick Fosbury's one-man high jump revolution. You can follow Bob on Twitter. The handle's at Bob_Welsh23. The website is bobwelsh.net. Glad your version of retirement is suiting you. Appreciate the time. Best of luck with the book, Bob. I hope we can catch up again down the road.
Much appreciated, Steve. Take care. Thanks.
All right, take it easy. All right, we're running a little tardy, but some really fascinating stuff there. It's a great book. I've obviously read it, have my copy here. If you know me and would like to borrow it and could be trusted to return it, maybe get a hold of me.
18 months on the job now or so, and we feel pretty confident that we've improved. Going into our second year, the development that's taken place on really both sides of the ball, changing the roster a little bit into year two, and really excited about some of the talent we've got coming back. The development continues, and we're confident in this league, it's competitive. There's some good players in this league, there's some good coaches in this league, and we feel like we're right there with them, and we're looking forward to year two.
Jonathan Smith, the head football coach of Oregon State at Media Day today down in L.A. as we welcome you back to Sports Talk 95.3 The Score. I know we ran late, but I really had a lot I wanted to discuss with Bob Welsh about his terrific book. So now we'll sneak in one phone call to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. We go bring in Destin. How you doing?
Hey, Steve. I got in at the end of your conversation about Dick Fosbury. I was coached by Bernie Wagner at Western Oregon in the late 90s. And the thing that I was wondering, since I caught you so late, who came up with the Fosbury flop? Did Dick approach Bernie about it, or did Bernie have the idea of switching from the California role to the...
No. That was all Dick Fosbury. He came up with the idea, and his coach at the time was a little reluctant to allow him to try it in competition. That's why it's called the Fosbury Flop.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, I just kind of caught you at the end, and I didn't really... That was one thing I always wondered about in the past, so thank you for clearing it up.
No, and that's the book that I don't know if you caught the gentleman I was talking to, Bob Welsh, who used to write for the Register Guard, has a book out about Dick Fosbury.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, have a good one. Appreciate the call. All right, I guess that about takes us up to break time. But anyway, looking ahead to the 5 o'clock hour, we'll... talk about some of the stuff that went down in Southern California today, Pac-12 Media Day, as we count down 5 weeks to the start of the regular season. Yowza. Back with the 5 o'clock hour on a Wednesday next, 95.3 The Score.